Okay, we're talking about the we take a look at the first page. So as I said, it would seem that both Adam and Chava partook of the same faith. They both violated the mitzvah of Hashem, the man of God. You know, which was that they could not eat from the fruit of the tree of good knowledge of good and evil. Okay. But if you take a look at the sutta more carefully, you'll see that even though the result was the same, but the causative factor behind the faith was not the same motive. Okay, anybody discover that? Give a chumash. This distinction was pointed out by Rabbi Chait many years ago. For the view of the information. In Voracious Perikimel. That's true. Okay, that's true. But that's... You're going into the... Yeah, you're right. I didn't mean that. That's a good point. The woman was affected by the nachash. Each one was affected by something. The woman was affected by the nachash. That's a parsha in its own right, which we can take up. What exactly is the role of the nachash? What is the nachash? How are we supposed to understand that? In succeeding weeks, we can review these issues. And the man, well, apparently was not affected by the nachash, but the man was affected by the woman. Okay, but just take a look at how the Torah describes the fate of the woman. That's in Gimel, a Pasuk Vav. That was it, Atera Isha, the woman saw the Torah ate from Achol, that the tree was good for eating, that he saw the Ruleinayim, and desirous for the eyes, the Nechmad ate from Hakiel. And it was nechmad, it was very desirable for chat, a seichel, to become, to gain knowledge. But tikach nipiria v'tochal, she took from his fruit and she ate. But titen gam isha ima v'yochal, and she gave it also to her husband with her, and he ate. Okay, that was her faith. That's the description of her faith. What caused the man to eat it, we don't know. All it says is that she gave him. So what? But what caused him to eat it? He knew it was seaweed, right? Now, take a look at the part of the methodology of learning Chumash, just like anything else, is to pay careful attention to the word. And to, sometimes things on the surface they seem okay, but if you delve into them, they don't fit properly. Now, take a look where God describes what God describes for him. God defines for him what his chait is. Where do you find that? That's in Pasuk Yizayin. Perikimel Pasuk Yizayin. Take a look. What's wrong with the Pasuk? Seems to me there's something very wrong with the Pasuk. On a plane, so that looks good. Yeah, you're really... That's really delving into the wording. That's good. I mean, I didn't... I assume it's just an explanation, but... Okay, you can make a case, Moshe. Kishamat l'kol ishkacha, v'atokal m'na'ech ha'shet yishikhal. That's a good point, by the way. I hadn't thought of that point. He's saying that it seems like there's two sins. One is, he wants something like this. One is, because there's no redundancy in the Torah. One is, Kishan Lata Torah Sef, you listen to our voice. That's okay. The second one is, if you ate from the fruit, I commanded you. That's another one. You see? Of course, though, on the level of plain shot, you can't learn that one. The thing is, you listen, one is an explanation, of it's a qualification of the other. You listen to your wife, and you ate from the fruit that I commanded you not to eat from it. That's like all one complete unit, you think. You might ask, well, why does the Torah have to mention this? You know. But all right, let's leave your point for the time being. But there's something fundamentally wrong over here. Is this really true? That's why I told you to go back to
everything.
You study very carefully. The Torah does not mention that she said anything to me. Where was the dialogue? All it says was, but tikach nipiria v'tochal, she took from his fruit and she ate, but titen gam l'isha ima, she gave it to him and he ate, but it doesn't say that she spoke to him. And yet here, he is being condemned for listening to the voice of your wife, when in point of fact, it doesn't seem to have occurred. What was the word of the book? And if you tell me that really there was a dialogue, but the Torah is not recording it, you know, sometimes, that does take place. Somebody wants to suggest that. When it says, that when the brothers came back from Mitzrayim and with Yosef and accused him of being spies, so they said we're guilty concerning our brother that we didn't listen to the suffering of the soul. When he pleaded with us and we didn't listen. So the Farshim asked, but if you go back to the story of the Mechira, it doesn't say that Yosef pleaded with us. You read the description. The Ramban says that the Torah is rich in certain places and poor in others, which means to say that in certain, the Torah is not interested in, when the Torah describes the Mechira, it was doing it from the perspective of the brother. It was not interested in telling you Yosef's perspective. So, however, later on when they did Tshuva and they brought out all the factors, so from this we can put the two together. That's happened in a number of places where a piece of information is omitted in one place, but from the way it's being described in a different context somewhere else, you could put the pieces together. That's the way the Torah is written. So somebody wanted to say that that's, we should make the assumption over here too. I find that very hard to accept, that answer. I'm not going to say it's impossible. But the Torah over here is going into the particulars. The Torah is going into the particulars. It's mentioning the details. I mean, it should have, it's mentioning the conversation between the Nachash, and Chava. So that would be something important. But why wouldn't the Torah mention the words that she used? Also, another reason why I reject that answer is because what did he say? Look what Adam with God, when God confronted Adam, what did he say? What was his defense? Take a look at what he says. Vayomer Adam, the man said, Isha shenasati imadi. That's very interesting what you learn, the various reactions, the certain instinctive reactions, chain reactions, okay. The woman that you placed with me, he not totally married, so okay, she gave me the food, and I ate. Of course, what kind of, that's just a repetition of the fact. What kind of an answer is that? Now, but the point is, you do see from there, I believe, that he's trying to defend himself, and the only defense he can come up with is that she gave it to me, and I ate. Which is a very weak defense. But now, if we ought to assume that there was more, that she actually, because the woman did mention the snake. The snake seduced me. But she said she mentioned that factor in her own defense. Now if there was a dialogue and she used words and tried to convince him, it doesn't make it right, but it would have been more of a defense. So why wouldn't he say that the woman convinced him? Alright? So from all of this, the pasuk says she gave it to Adam and God says she gave it to me. God, when he condemns, as you listen to the voice of your wife. So the questions that I'd like to address are, first of all, the obvious discussion. What's going on over here? And also, what do we see from this? How would you define the difference between the faith of Chava and Chayavah? In other words, in understanding the chayk, it's not just a question of the maisa there, the action. The action was the same. They both violated the command. However, the character, the underlying character of the defect, the corruption behind it, it seems, was a different one in the case of Chava as opposed to... Those are the two basic questions. Montes is a good point. Montes is saying that Chava is more premeditated. In the sense that... because she was grappling. Snake, she regarded the snake with her. There were little discussions. She was grappling with his premeditated. The case of Adam doesn't seem premeditated. It just seems like one man. Okay, that's a good distinction. Yeah, that's a good question. Why did he take it so quickly if he knew it was wrong? But he didn't mean, I don't see anything in his answer which indicates that he was denying that he knew that it was wrong. He knew it was wrong. He's just saying, the question is, what kind of an answer is this? Question is, what type of an answer is this? It's like, you know, when children even give this kind of an answer. Whenever they do something wrong, they always try and blame it on somebody else. He gave it to me, you know, like, why were you playing with the mattress? He gave it, you know, and parents always say, well, what kind of a thing is that? You're responsible. Now, of course, we have to understand that on a deeper level, Adam was on a very high level. So he's not talking like a child all of a sudden. But as I'm saying, the problem with the answer is that on the surface it appears that way. Tanya suggests something. He wants to suggest the idea that we really shouldn't delve too deeply into the answer because we didn't think about it. It was just like some blood was out.
I would say, the same might have used the question.
But the way to do it is not always, like sometimes you just read the Chumash, then you read the Rashi, right? Maybe sometimes I read the Pesukim and work out your own problems, thoughts, etc. Then when you go into the Farshim, you appreciate them more. Because that's the meaning, you can see what the problems are. You're just reading them without knowing what the problems are. I think that, what does Rashi say? Ashen Asati Mali, the woman that you placed there with me. And hey, look at the words, they're very careful. Because he didn't just say, he could have really said, Isha Nasta Limine Baruch. But you see, every pasuk in the Torah is loaded with meaning. Every yawn, you can see that, right? Just take a look at that pasuk. Why are there extra words over here? God certainly knew. No, he's talking to God. God certainly knows who put the woman there. He had just created her, right? So what should he have said? By Yom Ra'ad, the pasuk he said, Aisha Nasna Li Minayit Minayit Barachel. Why do you have to say the extra words, Asher Nasata Imadi? So Rashi says, quote a Gemara, Kan Kafa B'Tova. He was a Kafi Tova. Kafi Tova is someone who negates the rule. When you negate, you do someone a favor, he negates the whole thing. In other words, that because God, this is really a good that God had done to him. Because he said, Lotov Hayos Adam Lavado. He wasn't in a perfect state, Lavado. Esalo Ezo Tenegdo. So God made an Ezo Tenegdo, and when he saw her, he was very happy. Zos Apam. Right? He did a good. And then he took, because of his sin, he couldn't tolerate the idea of being wrong. He blamed it on her. He actually blamed it on her. And more than that, the pasuk is pointing out, Hashem, God, indirectly, he's blaming God. Yeah, you're the Hashem, Ha'isha, Hashem Nasat, the Imadi, there's an implication. It's not a, he doesn't have the chutzpah to openly. Sometimes people express themselves through implication. Hashem Nasat, the Imadi is a very important statement. Like, now, a person sins, he becomes, if you see how it affects his whole relationship with God, that's the point we're reading this morning, and that's the story, how it affects his whole relationship with God. So, distorts your whole view of reality. Things which in reality are good, just because you misuse them, you're not going to say, well, it's me, it's my fault. No, something wrong with the system. But all I brought it into, relates back to what Tani's saying is that, you see, they wouldn't blame him for being a couple of toes, it's just, like he wasn't even in a state when he was thinking. I mean, this was his position at that time. Because when a person sins, he's thinking about what's the automatic reaction. It triggers off a process in the mind. There's a process in the mind called defense. You know, psychological defense. Defense mechanism. And these defense mechanisms entail many, many ideas, which if a person were to consciously face the implications would be really a lot of philosophical distortion. And you're right, there is a certain implication that God did something harmful to me. He's not saying it openly, there's an implication. There is an implication that I don't have free will. I couldn't, I had no choice, which is false. You have to be able to. This wasn't predetermined. But he seems to be saying, once you gave me the woman, it's sort of like I had no choice anymore. Okay, let's see if we can tie it all together now. Get down to the, at least the first issue would be this discrepancy though. Did she talk to him or didn't she talk to him? If she did talk to him, so why didn't the girl record it? And why doesn't he use it as a defense? Because you see, he's in a very defensive mood. On the other hand, if she did not talk to him, so then why is God saying, because Kishon Matla told the Stecha? You want to say that by listening, by following the evil way, that's listening. Would you describe it that way? Sometimes there are two situations. Sometimes you initiate a sin, and sometimes you sin because you're influenced by others. I mean, we all know this. And so sometimes, when you're on your own, in a certain environment, you have a tie, you have a desire for certain things, but you can control it. Then you go to a different environment. Isn't that true? You go to a different environment, and then you see somebody else do it, and then suddenly you can't control it. And you do it. Now, if I were to condemn you, I would say that you gave him to your lust. I wouldn't say because you didn't listen to the other person. That other person didn't, unless that other person tried to seduce you or convince you. But if that didn't occur, it's just that once you saw that person doing it, you couldn't control yourself anymore. So that's a sin, that's your own. So you're doing the same thing as him. The only thing is, that is, his type is greater. He doesn't need the influence of others. You have a certain amount of control. As long as you're not in bad company, you can control yourself. But in bad company, but that's not listening to the voice.
No,
that's what you mean.
When it's pulling at the dialogue, it's possible.
And I'll tell you, there's another proof of that. Hold on a second. Once I'm on the point. See, if that's the case, then you wouldn't need the fact that you gave it to him. Then it would be that once he saw her eating it, so he ate it too. It's a given. What makes him into a chalte is the given. Had she not given to him, I'd have to conclude. He would have seen that she did it, and he would not have done it. You have to assume that her giving it to him was an essential component. That he sort of like instinctively, like out purposely. Like sometimes somebody gives you something and you don't even realize it. If that's the case, then that would be a different type of thing. That's like in Tazel, the person. His sin would not have such great significance.
I think
sometimes, I'm forgetful. You know, you're involved in thoughts and somebody hands you something and it could even happen on Shabbos or whatever, you forget, but it's Shabbos. You know, the whole mukta, alright, so you'll say it's shogeg, but that's clearly not what's happening. This is a profound thing. He's being severely punished. He's being cast out of Gan Eden. The whole reality is changing for him. Just because he was preoccupied, he didn't stop and think. And that, how could that be with the Tzivei Hashem? Well, that was the only commandment that he had. It had to be something of great importance. I don't think it was the shogeg. I don't think that his chait was the shogeg. All right, let me try one more, then I'll see if I can resolve this stuff. Good. Monty said it before. There's a very important distinction between the chait of the Chava and the chait of Adam in terms of the character. The character of her chait essentially was she gave in to the desires of her imagination. Right. Einayim always means the... Of course, there's two factors working with the eye. You know, the eye is an instinctual factor. But it's more, when a person sings, it's not just the instinctual factor. His imagination creates a whole fantasy of beauty, of wonder that's most... Well, it's just, usually when a person sings, it's not just a base emotion. He can control. But the emotion convinces the mind that this is a wonderful thing. That's basically, she gave in to the force of her imagination. Nechmadu, Taiva, Vishisava, Lein Naim, it has all those ingredients. And she that was hers, that's a chet. That's a chet. Alright, so we have to come back instinctively. Then it says, but she didn't stop and think. The giving to the Adam wasn't preceded by any calculation. They didn't get enough for that. That's an instinctive kind of a thing. What's the instinct over there? Rashi's pointing to. Now, the thing is like this, though. The gift, when the Torah says, Gishamat l'chol l'shtecha, I'm saying like this, that it wasn't just an act of giving. It was an unspoken message. It wasn't real speech. It wasn't real dialogue in a physical sense. But when she gave it to him, she gave it to him, it carried a certain message. Now, what was the message? What was the message? What would you say? That I really want you to do this. In other words, I'll be very unhappy if you do not do this. This is my will. If you want, you understand, there's a certain message involved. That's the Shemato Kol L'Shtecha. See, she, why did she give it to him? Why did she give it to him? Because you learn a lot of different points. Once a person sins, like the Rambam says, there's different categories of sin that are very hard to choose from. Someone is machti es haravim, of course, there are other people to sin. But yeah, there's such a thing as a chok, okay? Machti es haravim is a very hard to be choosing. So in a certain sense, she I don't know, I'm not calling her Machti as a rab. But once there's a certain innate tendency when a person commits an avera, they like to bring others down with them. It's like a natural effect. Yeah, of course they can't tolerate that they're inferior. Now you have a situation where he's on a high level, he obeys the command of God, and she's rebellious. She sends that. However, if he does it also, so then there's no superiority. And also, there's the personal, she doesn't lose him. Right? Then there's a breach. She realized that if he stayed on that level, and she's a sinner, he would look down on her. They wouldn't be together anymore. So that giving to him is like an automatic thing. But it wasn't just giving. It's there was a message over there. The test, the challenge for Adam was to resist the opinion, the need for the approval of somebody else. That's the other message. So there are two major, from this you see the two prototypes of the factors which bring people down. There are two, and all the different sins in the world basically will fall down to one of two categories that could be overlapping. A person will sin for two possible reasons. Either because he's overcome by his taiva, lust. And lust, as I said, it's not so much. The lust is not just the force of the instinct, but the imagination. Like in his eyes, like this is the greatest good. He's got to have this thing. That's one thing. But then there's another factor. And that is that he has to conform to the needs. He needs the approval of other people. He needs the approval of other people. And that could be an even more powerful factor. People live their lives, many times in business, a lot of people get involved in shady kind of deals, and it's not that they really need the money that much, but they have an image that they have to live up to, in their society, the family, the people, whatever, and they can't stand the idea that if they fail, they go bankrupt, and then people look at them like a failure. Okay? So that's listening to the voice. That's the voice of society saying, but if you don't have money, you're nothing. You're nobody. The need for human approval. Now, once, before Chava was created, so Adam wasn't a social being. Once Chava was created, so now he's a social being. So that's a good thing if it's utilized properly. But it also contains the seeds of a problem. And that is, a social being wants to have the approval of the people who are important to him. See, again, it's not just it could be images in your mind, it could be society, it could be a specific individual. So both are true. The Torah is describing what took place. The action was instinctive. As soon as she sinned, she didn't want to be cast off from him, so she gave it to him. But that was talking to him. There was a message over there. And his faith was Kishamatra culture. That he could not withstand the pain or the difficulty in his own mind of the fact that she would be unhappy. So that's the essence of his faith. Alright, let me see if I can find out. I'm saying that there's no dialogue, but there was communication. There was communication. In human relationships, communication, very often, the most effective communication doesn't have words. Sometimes a wife or parents and children, just a certain look. When you see a certain look, it carries a message. You'd better get that thing done. And sometimes it's more effective than the word. Okay? What I'm saying is, but he should realize, God is clarifying to him what it was. He's defining the faith in him, because that's important for him to understand this defect. He shall not look all the stuff. Now, you also see in the reaction of Adam, Ha'isha shenasate imodi hinasali v'na eitz va'okeh. That's a distortion. That's a distortion of reality. In other words, In other words, it's really not my fault. Because once I became involved with a woman, I had this need, so then I didn't have such... It's not completely my fault. You see, I didn't have to... I'm different. Now I'm like, he's a tough result. Now I'm a social being. I'm affected by the influence of others and so on and so forth. He didn't deny that he did. He didn't deny, but he was deflecting the blame, the responsibility. It's not for all. Had she not given it to me, I wouldn't have done it. You see? But of course, that's unacceptable. But that's always... See, that's always the reaction. That as soon as a person strays from the path and gets into trouble, so then he can't look... The instinctive reaction is not to look at himself. I'm wrong. It's this. But there's something wrong with the situation over here. And this always will ultimately lead to God. Because Hashem not sounds tough. And therefore when a person blames his failures on a situation, so ultimately in a certain level it always goes back to God. Because who's responsible? Whether he says it overtly or not, meaning that God created the world, God set it up, and apparently it doesn't work well. Okay, so all chayt, that's reiterating the point we made this morning, that all chayt in one way or another is going to affect the person in the relation with the same God. That's why the whole rest of the tshuva is the same Hashem. You're saying it's not such a terrible sin. You're trying to, he's trying to defend himself. I didn't really sin. I don't want him to sin. I just did it for her. It's not me. It doesn't affect me. That's what a person's really saying. I'm not interested in this thing. I just did it in this social situation to make them happy, but it doesn't affect me. Maybe that's part of the defense. You see, that sin, I mean, like Tony said before, you said that he doesn't have as much free will. Yeah, but also, it's not so terrible. It means to say, I'm not, you know, a lot of times a person will use this defense. Alright, this is the wrong thing, but I really, it doesn't affect me. Like, I had a few drinks. I'm not supposed to drink. And yeah, I was social, but the whole group, it was a business game. Maybe I had a few drinks too, but these things don't affect me. You should be aware that you also have tremendous desire. And Vatocha, you partook of the chayt. Don't try and minimize. The fact that the chayt came about as a result of somebody else's instigation, don't use that as a factor to minimize and think that it's not so, it's not going to affect people. Doesn't matter. Vatocha omineh, and you became a sinner. You're responsible, and you became a sinner, and you have to face all the consequences of that. The fact that it came about as a result of somebody else's instigation does not in any way mitigate it. He was using it as a mitigating factor. He also desired it. He also had a struggle. The only thing was that he was strong enough. He was strong enough on his own to overcome. Look that he was free of the struggle. Everybody has the same title. But left to himself, he would have overcome it. And left to herself, she didn't. Okay? But the point is that once you're led into sin because of somebody else's influence, you tend to think, so it's not me. It's not really me. That's not the way I would behave in that situation. You become the sin. You can't operate that way. You've got to take full blame as though there were no God in the world. Of course, God pointed out to him what his defect was. You have two things. You have a double chayt. You have a chayt of kishamat l'kolish, and you have a chayt of atol. That's why, because that's not kishamat, I'm reading in, you see? That's why both points are being made, because God here is like an indictment, telling him exactly what the sin is. There's two sins over here. Pachav is one thing, chayt. For you, it's kishamat l'kolish, and you have batocha. You have two areas that you have to work on. Two areas. Kiji is correct. We did not go into the project which describes her fall. Because it says Torah is the Machol, the Taiva, right? Nayim, the Mechmad Lahaskil. It means it was an object of Taiva, but the Taiva had many components to it. It wasn't a singular kind of a thing. But I didn't go into it this week.
Tetvav. As I mentioned, you have to read the Torah, so to speak, in slow motion. Carefully, slowly, and you begin to notice certain things. This is the, so to speak, the second description. There's two descriptions of the creation. One is just a factual listing of the order of what was created. Then, in the next chapter, the Torah goes back and goes into what was created, but more from the point of view of explaining the reason for the order of these things, and the more information about the creation. There's actually two chapters here on the creation. And the second one is going into the more of an explanation, more of the particulars. For example, in the first story, it says that the man and the woman would appear were created simultaneously. Just like in all the other species, male and female were created simultaneously. However, when you read the second story, we see that's not the case. Okay, so the objective of the first story is just simply to tell you the factual order of what was created. The objective of the second story is to give you more insight into some of the reasons, into the conditions in which man was created and so forth. The fact that, so picking it up from there, there's two kinds of an order. There's, of course, a chronological, then there's a logical order, and the two don't always coincide. Do not always coincide. Alright? Now, let's pick it up from the phase, Perek phase, in Tezvav. Where it's talking about the creation, in the second account, it's talking about the creation of man. Well, the creation has been mentioned in Zion. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim es Adam Ofer min Adama, v'yivach v'yapav nishmas chayim, v'yiyu Adam nafesh chaya. And this is that God planted a garden, Gan Eden. And he placed there the man that he had created. Okay. Then it says that it's not going in chronological order. Then it's saying what God is describing the garden for us. Well, what existed in the garden? Every tree which was desirous to the sight and good for food. All these things one can ask. And the tree of life in the middle of the garden, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Everything here has to be explained. Then it goes on to the rivers that went out of Eden. Lahashkos Zagan. From there they split up and they did into four heads, so to speak. And it ends. What's the purpose of this? I'm not taking this up right now. It's a good area to go into. Then it goes back to Adam and Tezvav, seemingly repetitive, because the Vayikar Hashem Elokim as Adam, it says that God took the man, Vayanichehu b'Gan Eden, and he placed him in the garden, Li'avdo l'shama, to avoda, to work it and to guard it. Okay, let's just stop on pause for a moment on that pasuk. What's the question? Differently, what do you see from this pasuk? What does this pasuk teach us about? That was his purpose.
That's what he said. That's the purpose of getting done. Right. I said Adam, the man when he was created. Let's say it could not
always call the question. But you see, the Torah, why does the Torah have to emphasize the fact that God placed him there? The Torah tells us that God actually placed him there. I think it's telling us something about the difference between Adam and the animals. And that is that it doesn't tell us anything about where God placed the animals. There's no concept of placing the animals. Because the animal simply exists in a state of nature. But man can't exist in a state of nature. Man needs a context. In order for man to thrive, he needs a certain environment. He needs a habitat, so to speak, or a civilization. That came later. But even in this situation, he couldn't live in the wild. He needed a particular... So God had prepared for him a situation in which he could exist and find and fulfill his objective. Man can't find his objective simply by following his instincts. So he needs a situation. that God had prepared that situation. That situation was the Gan Eden. Was the Gan Eden. And what does it mean, Liyavdo Lishamra? And what is the purpose of that? Now, I don't understand. You mean the purpose was to work the garden? Just to that was his purpose, was to work? No, I'm just saying, I'm questioning you. Does that mean you could learn it that way? Plain meaning would fit that way. Does that mean that that was his purpose in life? He was created to work a garden?
But the garden was for him. Like
that sounds a little bit strange.
What is his garden?
His purpose is not stated over here. His purpose is associated with life in the Gan Eden, clearly. But in the Gan Eden, he did have to, it's telling you that Liyavdo Lishamra was this, he was charged with that job. He had the job of Liyavdo Lishamra. But that wasn't the purpose. That was simply something that had to be there. He placed him there, but as a result of that, he had the obligation of Liyavdo Lishamra. But that wasn't his function in life. It meant that even in Gan Eden, he had to, because the thing, it would seem, just in general terms, that prior to the Chet, he really did not have to struggle for his sustenance. That was the state of the Gan Eden. God planted all these trees, these fantastic trees, these fruits, and he's given permission to call it the Gan Eden. He can eat from all the fruits. So what does he have to do? So what's the problem? So he derives his sustenance from nature. He doesn't have to work. So what's he working for? Right? So you see from this that he was given entry into the Gan Eden, but it did require, in order to maintain the Gan Eden, he had to maintain the Gan Eden through some kind of work. It's not really clear what that avodah is, but it was necessary, even in this situation, it was necessary to have avodah. But it was a completely different kind of avodah. It wasn't b'zeis apecha toch alecha. That was a result of the chet, that the entire situation changed. And then he had to be involved in a struggle for existence. At this point in time, he was not involved in a struggle for existence. What is fun, because you see a few psukim later on, that God brings the animals to him to see what he would call them. So he's involved in chokhmah. He's involved in study and creation. That was his real mission, to be involved in chokhmah. And in order to do so, God created a situation which was perfectly designed for that, where he would not have to exert himself. So therefore, what you have to explain over here is what is the need to have a form of avodah altogether. Avodah had to be there, but it was one which did not require exertion. But nevertheless, he was responsible for the maintenance of the Gan. What the particulars are, we do not know, but there had to be that responsibility. There had to be that responsibility. All right, that's one question. Let's take up another point. Tell me what the next two psukim. Vayetzav Hashem Elokim al Adam Leimor, and God commanded concerning the man, saying, "Mikol Eitz Hagan Achol Tochel." From all the trees of the garden, you can eat. Umayetz Hadas Tovara, and from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, Lo Sochal Nimenu. You may not eat from it. Ki v'yom achocham yimenu mos tamos. Because on the day that you eat from it, you will die. Okay, let's pause and analyze that. What's the question over here? Where is the tzivui over here? Is the mitzvah over here simply... He was given a mitzvah at this point in time. He was given a mitzvah. All right, first of all, I'd like to ask a question. Why was he given a mitzvah? Why was it necessary to have the phenomenon of a mitzvah? Other Marishan had basically one mitzvah. Now it would seem that mitzvah was that he couldn't eat from the tree of the Eitz Hadas Tovara. But what? So why didn't God simply tell him not to eat from that tree? I mean, so then of course he could eat from all the other trees. Why is there a specific? It would seem that there is a specific mitzvah with regard to a positive command over here. Mikol Eitz Hagan Achol Tochel. So then, is that a mitzvah? Is that a mitzvah say? Mitzvah say to eat from the other trees? How do you fit that into the pasuk of it? How are you supposed to understand that? And if that's the case, why did he need a mitzvah that you can eat from all these things? Why didn't he by simply saying you can't eat from that tree? Obviously, that's all that's been prohibited. I think obvious correct. You put them in the garden, and all you need to do is to prohibit that which is prohibited. And then I would assume, since you prohibited that everything else is okay. So why is the mitzvah couched in that phrase of Mikol et Hagan Ochal Tocha? What's the point of that? Now somebody asked me a question. I thought it was a good question. It would seem that, see, God gave him a mitzvah. Now God accompanied that with a threat. Alright. On the day that you eat from it, you will die. So of course that's difficult on its own, right? What does that mean? Because in point of fact he ate and didn't die. Right, so what does it mean on the day? I mean, what happened? And we don't see any explanation later on as to that should have been taken up after the sin, that God doesn't tell him, well, you're going to die now, and then he pleads for his life or whatever. I mean, and the whole issue of death doesn't seem to come up. So first of all, we have to understand what it means. No, but the question I was asked, I thought it was a good question, I hadn't thought of that before, was that why does he need this thread altogether? I mean, isn't the mere fact that he was on a high level? Adam Rish was a very high level. Yitzir Kapash Lotai Barakul, he was the creation, the handiwork of God, his hand, so to speak. And he was on a high level, and the fact is that you'll be disobedient to my command. Why does he have to? Why must he be told? It's like a threat, it's like a child. It's, in other words, it would seem that he didn't appreciate a person that has a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, a person that is on the level that realizes that everything that God commands is for our benefit, and everything that God tells us to stay away from is for our benefit because it's detrimental to us, doesn't really need to be threatened. Now, was Adam on a high level or was he on a low level? Of course, if you're dealing with a child, when do you issue... When you're dealing with a mature, intelligent person, you tell him, you give him instructions. He understands that it's for your benefit. You know, there's no threat. But if you're dealing with a child, you tell him not to cross the street. If you cross the street on your own, I'm going to punish you. A child needs to hear that because a child isn't intelligent enough to realize that there's a danger. An adult, you point out there's a danger over there, that's it, you don't have to threaten them. Now, why did Adam have to be threatened with death? Aside from the fact that we don't understand what the threat was, let's assume we do. Why isn't, given the fact that he had a close relationship with God, the mere fact that God, didn't he serve God in Ahava? The person who serves God from Ahava does not have to have a threat that on the day that you eat, when you're going to die. I thought that was a good question. But to try and answer this, we have to see if we can explain what it means. What does it mean? What happened? In point of fact, he did not die. So then what does it mean? Because why is the story of this faith an integral part of the story of creation?
Because the story is showing the whole consciousness.
That is the question that I'm asking. Oh, maybe you have the answer. Hold on for a second. In other words, the real question that we should be asking is that why the concept of creation is one concept. So the Torah gives us the story of creation. Alright? Now, then the next segment of the Torah will be not about creation anymore, but about the history of man. What man does after he's created. So you have the story, for example, the story of Cain and Hevel is not a part of the story of creation anymore. Correct? Yet, that's history. Now, the story of the command and what Adam does with the command and his obedience and disobedience and Chavon, she gives him the fruit and he eats and the whole business, and then God talks to him and all that, why is that part of the story of creation? That should be after creation. That's the especially in the history section. We see here that this is all part of creation.
No, hold on. Where is the cut off point from creation till also you say?
No, it's really part of creation. What's the proof that it's part of creation?
Yes, it's the third.
Of course, it's still the Torah is not completed, right?
Yeah, the Pesukim of Kabbalah are still talking.
Yeah. There's still another one.
Kabbalah isn't even created yet.
That's a good riot. Why give the command now?
Is that another question?
Obviously, the command is placed over here. I'll show you another proof. The command is placed over here because this entire story is part of the third creation. If it was not, then why would the command be placed now? Because God is still talking about creation. Then it goes on to talk about creation.
Good.
So why is it interrupted by the mitzvah? The mitzvah is something else. What is the mitzvah? I could ask the question that way. Clearly, what does the mitzvah have to do with creation? That's a more fundamental question. Let's ask it that way. There seems to be a serious interruption, a digression. I can understand that there's a second account, you know, to give explanations. For example, the creation of woman. That the first man was created, he was alone, and in the human species, the female had to be created from the man. That makes sense. That's all creation. But in the middle of everything, to talk about giving a ketzivui, what does that have to do with creation? That's misplaced. It should be, what should happen is like this. We should have the second account, which gives us this whole business, bringing of the animals, to see the namings, that's part of it. Because that ties in somehow with the idea of why the woman has to be created from the man, right? And then everybody's created, then they're incarnated, and now, chapter 2 is history. Tivoi, whatever, does, thing, etc. Right? So you see clearly the fact that the tivoi, which they violated, was given in the story of creation, is a clear raya that the story of the first faith is part and parcel of the story of creation. So of course you see so afterwards.
I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm not going to Yeah, part of the ocean. Only the light. Only the light set up. I'm on Jersey right now. As long as my time to surf the world. The air is a
Yeah,
No, 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 no